Something like 95% plus of Americans eat meat at least once in a while, so we're not that adverse to eating animals. It's just which animals that can become an issue. Even the people who don't discriminate between food from two-legged and four-legged animals might think twice before biting into food from an animal with six legs or more. Other than a lobster, perhaps. Much of the world outside North America includes insects in part of the menu, and an operation in Eugene surfs the leading edge of the insect-eating wave. Kraft Crickets is big on growing crickets for food and showing people how to do it for themselves. Let's hear more. Austin Miller's title appears to be Chief Cricket Guy at Kraft Crickets in Eugene. Thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thanks for having me this morning. It's great to be on.
So are you an entomophagist?
By that, yes. That term means that I eat insects, and I definitely do eat insects. Some people think that I subsist purely on insects, but honestly, it's more like once a week I'll have a meal out of insects. I haven't 100% converted to 100% insects all the time.
Okay. For a few people in the world would, I would think, have gone to that extent.
Maybe seasonally. Mm-hmm. There might be places in the world where due to the weather or the climate that insects are just the preferred and easiest food to have for a small part of the year. But otherwise, yeah, I think it would be very hard to find someone who subsisted 100% on insects.
So, Austin, let's talk about the attraction. What got you to go over the line and begin thinking of bugs as food? Was it something other than taking a dare?
That's a good question. I grew up thinking that food came from grocery stores and never really thought about the connections of what I ate and how that impacted the greater world around me. And a few years ago, I was lucky enough to have an opportunity to take some time off and to travel. And when doing so, got exposed to some of these foods that are different than the Western diet. And to your point, I initially tried a bug thinking, oh, this is a novelty, this is kind of a dare, something I can tell my friends. I was surprised by how great it tasted. And then upon doing a little bit of research, I was really blown away by the benefits, both for nutrition reasons and also for the environment of people growing and eating insects. And was kind of shocked that we weren't doing more of it in the West, and thought it would be a good project for my partner and I to do together and to advocate.
I'll get to the benefits in a minute. I want to ask a little more about that first experience. Where were you and how was it prepared?
So I was in Oaxaca, Mexico. So it's a region of sort of central Mexico, which eats as a traditional food chapuline. So that's just their word for grasshoppers. And it's rather ubiquitous. When you're on the streets of Oaxaca City, the street vendors will have big, huge trays just full of these grasshoppers that are seasoned most often with chili and lime. And I ordered it at a restaurant there. I didn't quite want to buy it just off the street for my first time. And they served it with guacamole and tortillas. So I got some fresh guacamole. I had a huge bowl of crickets or of grasshoppers and a bunch of tortillas. And so just kind of put the grasshoppers with some avocado in a tortilla and ate it as so, and thought it was great.
Did you squint your eyes or make some sort of face? I'm just wondering what the first bite
was
like.
Yes, there is a huge psychological hurdle in eating your first insect, or at least consciously eating your first insect. And I was as guilty as the people that I talk to every day who eat their first insect, and worried that, you know, something awful might happen by me putting this bug in my mouth. And with each grasshopper, it got easier and easier, and probably by like the fifth or sixth, the trepidation was gone. I don't know anyone who has ever suffered anything horrible from eating an insect. It's just getting over that initial hurdle.
Austin Miller is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He got over the initial hurdle of eating insects and now is one of the partners in a company called Kraft Crickets based in Eugene, which shows people how to grow crickets for food. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So for the people who do start with from the position of, ew, how do you talk them down, Austin?
And that's a good question. It really depends by person. We all sort of have our own motivations for trying something new. And frankly, the easiest way to get people to try insects is just for them to watch other people do it and to realize that it's no big deal. And one thing that I've found is really successful, and I hate to say that this is an easier way to get people to try my crickets than by, you know, providing any good rational arguments, is we have these little stickers that we print out that say, I eat bugs, but we won't give people a sticker until they try one. And so many people just want that sticker that they're willing to overcome any sort of issue they have with eating crickets just to get that sticker. And so that's a one kind of silly way, but a very successful way, peer pressure. And then some people just buy into the arguments and realize that, you know, they should have an open mind. And so sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes I'll talk to someone 5-10 minutes before I can get them to try an insect. And a lot of times people still won't try it because it is something most people haven't thought of doing. We've spent most of our lives in this country saying bugs are bad, don't eat bugs, they're yucky. And then for someone to come and say, hey, actually, it's the opposite, it kind of messes with our internal rules, and our brain doesn't process that right away.
Yeah, there is some programming there, to be sure. I haven't talked about taste. When you tried those chapaline in Oaxaca with the chili and lime, I mean, what did you taste besides chili and lime?
I mean, frankly, a lot of chili and lime and avocado. They really don't have a ton of taste on your own. Again, a lot depends on how it's processed and how it's served. Our crickets, I would say 90%+ of the people who have them describe them as a seed or a nut, kind of like a sunflower seed is the most common thing I hear. And so when you think of a sunflower seed, not a huge amount of taste, but it makes it very amenable for using in your cooking because it's just takes on the flavors of whatever it's served with.
So beyond eating bugs, I mean, how did you end up settling on crickets as a way to move ahead in a business model?
Just through doing some initial research and seeing where, well, I mean, there really isn't a huge industry yet on bug eating in this country, but if you're going to look at any insect that has any sort of relevance, it would be crickets. There are companies that already use them for food. There are farms that are already producing crickets for food. There's some level of awareness. Plus, from my research, it just seemed like an insect that was easier to farm and also easier to convince people that you should try eating it. Another insect that has a lot of environmental benefits and is very nutritious is a cockroach. But it's hard enough getting people to eat a cricket. I didn't want to start off by trying to get people to eat cockroaches.
Yeah, there's a real sort of societal feeling about cockroaches that would be harder to overcome, I would think. So, I mean, are there parallels between eating bugs and other things that people do accept as part of the diet?
Yeah, we like to call it as the shrimp of the land. It's very similar to a lot of seafood or crustaceans that we would eat, both in terms of the nutritional profile, high in protein, all the essential amino acids, and also in terms of some of the allergens. So it's the same sort of shellfish allergens that people have from seafood you can get with crickets. I was going to make some other parallels, but I guess those are the big ones.
All right, but I was going to ask you about the shrimp part of this because I'm curious to know about preparations and whether you crunch them in the exoskeleton. I mean, is it sort of like eating shrimp with the tail on if you do?
Yeah, you eat the whole thing. And, I mean, it would be very laborious to remove the shells. Crickets are little. They're smaller than shrimp, that's for sure, at least most shrimp. You eat the whole thing. And there's nutrition is that there's fiber in the exoskeleton. And I don't know of a way that you could feasibly remove that. And that's one of the it adds a lot of crunch to it. But it also is a thing that frightens people out because it still looks like a cricket unless you process it further.
All right, we'll talk about further processing in just a moment. Austin Miller is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He calls himself the chief cricket guy at Kraft Crickets, based in Eugene, which is in the business of, at the moment, of showing people how to make their own cricket growing operations. Also licensed as the first cricket farm in Oregon, they tell us. We'll find out more about that in just a moment with your help. Join the conversation on the Exchange. You may have many questions or comments, or maybe you've done this yourself, or you want to get into the business. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So you are not currently offering crickets for sale, I notice. So what's been going on at Kraft Crickets of late?
Well, largely we had some issues with our facility, and so we were raising crickets in a warehouse in fairly central Eugene, and it wasn't the best facility for us to have our operations, and so we moved out of it, and in the meanwhile realized that even though we don't have a facility at this moment, we can really do a lot of outreach and get more people excited about insects and excited about eating them. We are convinced that crickets are a food of the future. It's just a matter of time, and I don't know if that's going to be 1 year from now or 100 years from now, but the more we can get out there advocating and getting other people not just familiar with eating crickets and eating insects, but with farming it and seeing it as a viable food option, the better for all of us.
Let's take some calls here. We have Brian in Klamath Falls on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Austin Miller from Kraft Crickets.
Hi, good morning. A highly scientific question. I've seen fox poop. I've seen raccoon poop. I know that vertebrates cannot digest chitin. Go right through you or what, man?
All right. So right to the end of the digestion process. Then, thanks for that, Brian. What do you say, Austin?
Yeah, was the question on what is the cricket poop like, or is it hard for people to digest them?
Yeah, hard for people. Does the chitin go right through you? Is the question?
I haven't had any issue with that. I guess it depends, perhaps person by person. But since putting crickets into my diet, it hasn't necessarily messed with my digestive processes.
Okay, no particular issues there. Okay, good to know. Boy, the phone lines are lighting up with people wanting to talk about crickets. Let's go to Joshua in Eureka. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Austin Miller. Joshua, go ahead.
Hey, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Hey, I had a question because you were asking, or you were talking specifically about eating cockroaches earlier. And I was just curious, my knowledge of cockroaches is that they live in these very dirty places and eat very unsanitary things, and they push all the contaminants or impurities into their exoskeleton, which is what gives them their darker color. I was curious if by eating those cockroaches, you're actually eating those contaminants.
Oh, excellent question. Thanks for that, Josh. Appreciate that.
That is a great question, and yes, you're absolutely right. I would not advocate for you to find a cockroach in your house and eat that, because precisely it's going to eat whatever it finds. It's going to eat a lot of garbage and crap, frankly. And so when you eat that, when you eat the cockroach, you're eating that crap. However, when you farm insects, you can control the inputs and you can control what they eat. So imagine you had cockroaches that were eating nice organic food and inputs, then the benefit of cockroaches is, as we all know, is they breed profusely. You can try to kill them, but they still exist. They can survive just about anything. And so if you had cockroaches contained and you were feeding it good quality inputs that you would put in your own body, then it could be a food source. But yeah, please don't go out and collect cockroaches, or crickets that matter, in the wild and eat them, because you don't know what they've been eating.
All right, good point there. So what are some of the things? You mentioned the benefits of farming crickets and other insects as livestock versus other kinds of livestock that we farm for food. What are the benefits?
So I guess there's two broad categories. One is you can raise insects on fewer inputs. So the fact that they're cold-blooded means that when you give them food, they're not using a bunch of that food to convert to heat. They're using that food to add body mass. So with my crickets, for every 2 pounds of food that I give them, I get 1 pound of body mass of cricket. Whereas something like a chicken, the average is maybe 4 to 1. Something like a cow, it can be anywhere from 10 to 20 to 1. So you need a lot less input in to get protein out. And you know, if you're able to create a nutritious protein-rich food with 10 times less input in. Those inputs use a lot of resources themselves to create. So you can start to imagine some of the benefits that has just on the environment of not needing to use so much land, so much feed, so much water. The other big benefit is the nutritional profile. It is a protein-rich food. The crickets we raise after we process them are 60% pure protein. And there's not many foods out there where you eat 1 gram of them, or you eat 1 ounce of them, and you get 16 grams of protein.
That's fairly respectable. We're talking again with Austin Miller, who is the chief cricket guy at Kraft Crickets based in Eugene, about eating insects and growing crickets yourself, which is entirely doable, it turns out. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 and jx@jeffnet.org. When you first went to whoever you needed to go to get your license to be the first cricket farm in Oregon, was there a lot of head scratching, or were the powers that be more or less ready for something like this?
I would say it was mixed, and more than head scratching, there was more curiosity. And so I worked with the Oregon Department of Agriculture and my local health inspector, and for a lot of people, it was just business as usual. And other people in the state, I feel like I got regulated more than other businesses, not necessarily because the state was being tough on me, but a lot of people were just curious and wanted to see the operation and understand it more. In the scheme of things, it was a smoother process than I was expecting, and appreciate that, the state was pretty open-minded and, helped me set up things and set up my operations in a way where I could produce safe, healthy food.
Austin, how much room, how many supplies? I mean, how much food? Is this how intensive an operation is that to grow some crickets for food?
You could have any from small to large. So our farm would have around 1 million crickets at a time, and we would have that in our facility was 1,400 square feet, but only about half of it was dedicated to crickets. And so we would have about 1 million crickets in 700 square feet. And we were able to turn that over every 8 weeks. So they have an 8-week life cycle. So every 8 weeks, we'd have another 1 million crickets in there. But I would say that is on the smaller side of operations. There are some cricket farms in North America that are over 20,000 square feet. And I've spoken with some very ambitious farmers in other parts of the world who are planning on having cricket farms that are multiple acres, if not hectares, in size. And then on the other extreme, a lot of people raise crickets very small scale in their home. Largely people raise crickets as feed for their reptiles, if they have pet reptiles. Mm-hmm. But some of us now are also raising it for ourselves as an alternative to raising chickens or something in our backyard. And for that, you really don't need much space at all. If you have some room in a spare closet or on a shelf in the back of your garage, you can raise some crickets.
Is it noisy? Crickets can make a lot of noise. Is it noisy to have them around?
Not as noisy as I would have expected.
Huh.
But when you hear, I feel like having 1 million crickets is not 1 million times louder than having 1 cricket.
Okay.
After a point, the volume doesn't get more, you just hear more chirping. And it's not, in our farm, when we have 1 million crickets going, if you step outside the front door, you don't hear a thing. You wouldn't know that there are 1 million crickets on the other side of the wall. And when you're inside the farm, it's not like you need to wear headphones to protect your ears. We could have this conversation just absolutely fine. But it's just, there is constant chirping. One thing about crickets is they only chirp when they're full adults, so they don't have the anatomy to make the chirping sound until they're adults. It's actually the adult male kind of doing his mating call. And when you're farming crickets for food, as soon as they become adults, they're not going to get much bigger. So we process them at that point. And so most of the crickets that are in our farm actually aren't even physically capable of chirping.
Okay, let's explore that term process, because we have a question from Tom in Jackson County. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. More and more people are taking an interest these days in how their food sources are cared for prior to the package. I was just wondering how you euthanize the crickets.
All right, excellent question. Thanks for that, Tom.
Yep, that is a great question. And so crickets, as they're cold-blooded, they're not able to survive temperatures below freezing for more than a few hours. And so what we do is we have our crickets, and they're living in their houses that they, or their terrariums that we have them raised in. And when we want to euthanize them, we literally take their terrarium and we move it into a walk-in freezer. And the crickets, systems slow down and they go into a hibernation just like they would do on a cold night. And so they're physically capable of surviving a cold night in the wild, but then they expect the sun to rise up again. And we keep them in there for over the course of a night. And so their systems just don't turn back on. And so the next day when we open up the freezer, they have all gone to sleep and have all died.
All right, so freezing is how you get a cricket ready for cooking. And there's a whole cookbook about this and stuff, too. All sorts of work out there from Austin Miller, who is the chief cricket guy at Kraft Crickets in Eugene. Thanks so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.